maybe you will not have a lot of idea of what you're doing when you get your first assignment, but everything is available on the internet.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode of Code and Beyond, a podcast where we talk about software development and anything beyond that. I'm Pablo, and today I'm here with my friend Alex and a new special guest, Pablo Hernández. Hello, Pablo.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Hello.
Quite frequently, people ask me about how I got into software development, how difficult or easy it is to learn how to code, how hard it is to get your first job, and so on. I come from a, let's call it, classic background, a computer science degree. That means my path to becoming a software developer was quite organic. That's why I thought that it would be great to have someone like Pablo, who is coming from a totally different background, and listen to his opinions and ideas.
So yeah, thank you. Like I said, thank you for having me. And yeah, my name is Pablo Hernández. I'm a software developer. I've been developing for 6 years now, and I'm mainly focused on backend development and web services. And I've also done a lot of work in legacy code because I've mostly worked for bigger companies. My main software development tools are Java, and I've also dabbled a bit in NSB, also Enterprise Service Bus. I've been working in this type of work for 6 years, and right now I'm happy that I made the change.
When did you make the change, and why did you make the change? And before all of that, what did you do before becoming a software developer?
So before I became a software developer, I studied geology. So I'm a geologist. We could say I like rocks. In this type of work, after doing my studies in geology, I specialized in water and minerals. So hydrogeology and mineralogy. And I started directly from the university in research. I worked in my thesis for a pair of years. And in this time, I also started doing a master's in computing. The name of the master's was a very long name, but at the end of the day, it was computing focused for parallel threading and supercomputers and so on. I found that very interesting, and I had the opportunity also to see all the common points there was between geology and software development. So at the end of the day, after doing this master's and seeing that research was not my strongest point, I made a change. So I started looking for jobs in software development, base software development, like starting Java. And then after a while, I got a job in a consulting company in Spain.
Nice.
And that was the start of it.
So the first time you encounter software development, you play around with the code, things like that, was during your PhD research, right?
Yeah. So I'd say that I've always had a bit of an interest in software development. I think every which one software developer, I've done a bit of basic when I was young, and I've also made a few coding scripts and mods for Neverwinter Nights, a computer video game.
Oh, you're coming from gaming then?
Yes. That was the start of all.
Yeah.
So then my first serious entry to software development was this time that I was in my PhD, that I started doing tools to help me with my research. So I was doing research on crystalline structures. Sometimes I would use some kind of tool hastily done in Python, for example. That was a bit of my entry to object-oriented programming and so. Yeah, that was one thing. In my studies, when I was doing this master, it was mostly just C, so doing it in C and OpenGL. So yeah, a bit more classic programming. Then when I changed to my own projects, I started using more new tools like Python, Java, and so on. And there's a big contrast, I think, between the jobs that I was doing in this time of my life. So I was doing research on one side, and on the other side, I was doing these tools and things with software development. And I've always had an impression that I'm more accustomed to software development in comparison with research. So research has a payoff of many, many years. You have a finished product after years and years of work. And in software development, you have your finished product directly. You can see the results of your work as you are finishing your code. And I think that's an absolute advantage of software development. So it's a very creative job, but you also have a direct feedback on what you're doing in the moment that you're finishing your code. And that's only a plus.
Yeah, feedback loop when you're a software developer, web developer, something like that is quite fast, right? Because you have like a weekly cadence or something like that, or 2 week cadence. So you can see what you're doing most of the time.
Yeah, so based research is, we could say, a bit soul-crushing, because at the end of the day, you are going to read a lot, you are going to investigate a lot, but you're not going to see if your work at the end of the day has an application or not. Only years from now on, but yeah. So you have to have a special type of mind, I think, for research. And for software development, it's a bit more open to all the people that want, for example, a creative job. On that point, software development is also a very creative job. So I like it very much. I think I have not lost any of the things that I found good about my old job. The only thing I could say I'm missing right now is mixing a bit of software development and geology. Because right now I'm working for a consulting company here in Germany. It's called Alten, and we are doing job for big clients. Right now we are working for people that take care of the income of most of the companies here in Germany. It's called DATEV. That means that, of course, that's more a financial thing than a geology thing. If I had the opportunity in the future, I would like to mix my two specializations, so geology and prior software development.
And they should be mixable, right? It should be possible to mix these two.
Of course.
Yeah.
So, yeah, one of my pet peeves when I was in geology is that we used a lot of tools, for example, for geophysics. When you want to, for example, analyze what is the structure of the underground, you can use seismic waves. So you make a tiny explosion and then you measure where these waves are reflected and when they come back and so on. And that allows you to see the structure of the underground. And all the tools we've used in Spain when I was studying geology were tools developed in the start of the 90s. So they were all very, very old tools with absolute not good user interfaces. And the thing is, most of the work that we do in geology at the end of the day can be modeled and used in big tools, for example, in big physics frameworks, because the Earth is a complex system and it would be something like, so a practical application would be right now, I think we use a lot of supercomputers to predict the climate, what the weather is going to be each day, because at the end of the day, you can model more or less the Earth like a complex system. We could do the same for underground, for the underground of the Earth. For example, if we wanted to predict earthquakes, that would be the absolute holy grail of geology right now. Trying to predict earthquakes, like, for example, other nature catastrophes we can predict, for example, volcanoes, but earthquakes we cannot predict so good. And if we could model the entire Earth in using computers, because that's, of course, not feasible doing it without computers, we could probably also get or predict where earthquakes are going to happen. That would be absolute one of the objectives, I think, of mixing computing and geology.
Why it's not been done so far? I mean, the modeling the whole Earth, the underground. Is it computational heavy or not that interesting for people?
Much too complex.
Okay.
It's much too complex. We don't understand it wholly. At the end of the day, it's always been said that geology is a bit like medicine, that we can only see the external symptoms and we can infer more or less what is happening in the innards of the Earth, but we cannot open the Earth to see how it is. So like with a human body, you cannot open, you can, but you would be killing the patient. And with the Earth, it's a bit, it would be unfeasible to make a big cut and see, 10 kilometers deep, what's the structure of the Earth. That's a bit the problem here, that we have to make this model with incomplete data. And with trying to model the atmosphere is a bit more easy because we have the entire atmosphere. We can measure in the entire atmosphere, but in the crust, in the Earth's crust, it's more complicated. I think it's a work in progress. As long as new tools are getting developed, maybe we'll get more and more information and we'll be able to make an entire model of the Earth.
That's really interesting. I think that whole topic is going to need a lot of developers for sure, because it's a place where clearly you can apply different tools and programming skills. I even think that these days, if you have programming skills, they are going to help you in your job, no matter what's your job. It's a lot of people, for example, teaching all their employees SQL because it's easier to retrieve data from databases and it's easy to produce queries to analyze the data that they have in their companies. And that's kind of programming skill, right? Know how to write the SQL queries or the right SQL queries is like you need some kind of programming knowledge. So yeah, I think everybody's walking towards that. At least everybody's going to have some kind of programming knowledge.
I wanted to say that it's exciting that we still have so many things on our planet to explore and to learn. So we don't even need to go to another planet, to Mars or whatever, right? We have lots of things to discover here.
Yeah, and I think they are also useful for the middleman because at the end of the day, like we said, for example, we know that a big earthquake is going to happen sooner or later in Los Angeles. Big fault that we have there, but we don't know exactly when it's going to happen. And that's always a big problem. So if we could predict that with more or less accuracy, we could spare a lot of, for example, all the construction techniques that must be used right now in all the houses there, because we don't know when this earthquake is going to happen. So all the houses have to be ultra extra built to withstand that. It's also if we could make a system like that, or if we could better our understanding of the Earth, and for example, also we could predict when a tsunami was going to hit the islands. That could only be a good thing.
Going back to the topic of transitioning from geologist to software engineer, at what point did you decide to try to find a job as a software developer? What was the thing that changed your mind and you were like, hey, I'm done with this scientific career and now I'm gonna give it a try to software development?
It was a bit this difference between the immediate payoff. So it's not such as I think software development is better or worse than research, mm-hmm. but it's more like I think it's like I said, a very creative job. I like it very much in that part. Type of people that can do or that can keep themselves on focused on research have to have a very ordered mind, and I'm not so ordered, I think. So I've always seen that I have better qualities as a software developer in comparison with a researcher. So at the end of the day, what I thought was, okay, I like how software development works with what I know, with the type of skills that I have. I am quick finding solutions or finding where the problems are. And this type of skills have proven useful also in software development. For example, with maintenance of applications in production. So at the end of the day, I thought, okay, I don't want to keep working on research because I don't think I have the ordered mind to keep doing it. And I only saw myself as a software developer from then on.
And how was it? Did you started to send CVs and all of a sudden you got a job, or was it hard, or how did you find the process of finding a
company? It was hard.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. I got into this endless chain of you must have experience to get a first job and you must have a first job to get experience. So this type of Ouroboros from there for getting a job. And then at the end of the day, my first double in software development, in professional software development, was a course in software testing. So I didn't even start like a software developer, backend software developer, we could say. I started making automation for tests. And then I didn't get a job from this course. So that was like a preparation for a job position in this company. And then they offered me 2 weeks after they offered me another course for Java development. And then I got the job as a Java developer. So I found that software testing was also interesting. Testing automation is a cool field of work. But yeah, I'm also very happy right now, like a Java developer. So right now I've been branching a bit more. I'm also doing some things in the cloud because it's the new hot thing. And yeah, I'm finding it. It's always, there's always something new. That's another thing that has kept me entertained in software development. That you're always learning something new each day.
It's never getting boring, like never.
No, never.
That's one of the benefits of this type of work.
Yeah.
I have to ask this question. Maybe it's a little bit off topic, but you've mentioned this multiple times already that software development is a creative job. And from my experience, I would say that software developers, they could be grouped like in two parties. The one party says software development is a creative job, so you're being creative. You basically create things that don't exist right before. And other people say no, this is it's a very kind of strict and ordered. You deliver things. You kind of, I don't know, make bricks or something to build stuff. Mm-hmm. What makes you think that software development is a creative job? Could you give an example? Or there must be something.
Yeah. So. At the end of the day, what I think of myself when I'm doing software development is that I am first and foremost a problem solver. I have a problem. Usually the problem is that something doesn't compile or that you must make a new part for an application. Like, for example, I was, this last week's I had for the first time, the problem of producer consumer, and I haven't tackled that. So you must learn how to tackle that. Most of the time, that means looking at searching in Google, of course, or looking it up in books or whatever, what have you. But of course, at the end of the day, you don't have a definite answer for these problems that you encounter. So you have to develop. So at the end of the day, software developers, you have to develop your own answer to this problem. And that's what I mean when I say that it's a creative job. You have to find the problem, like looking at logs or debugging or what have you, and then you have to find the solution to this problem. Normally or usually you will have this knowledge for the next time that you encounter this problem. So it's not just something mechanic that you're doing the same thing again and again. Each project, also when I'm, for example, I've done a lot of web services, and each new web service is not like the others because maybe you have different data, maybe you are in a different job environment or your business knowledge is different. And that's also a part of it, that I'm learning a lot about financial services and financial things by working in software development. Also, when maybe I don't have a big, big interest, but it's also interesting. So that's another part of this creative part of the job, that you are not only doing fixed work and they don't give you a design and this design is absolutely closed. That doesn't exist in professional software development, for what I've seen. At the very least, and all the positions have been always that there's some room to move. So you have to get to a destination. You have to make a software package or something, a service. But you have a lot of decisions you can make on how to get there. And that's this part that doesn't make it boring.
Yeah, Totally agree. And that makes it exciting, right? You have to always make choices. I think your experience tells you which choices to make in the end. The more you work, the better these choices are. I don't know. It's always exciting. It's like adventure all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, there's not a single day where I don't learn anything new. So that's always good.
Have you noticed maybe that this problem solving, I don't know, state of mind or the principles that you apply at your work when you need to deliver something, does it also goes outside of your work realm, right? Do you apply the same approaches, at least the same way of thinking to normal life?
Yeah. For example, one of my hobbies is electronics. I'm an electronics hobbyist. I use this kind of approximation a lot of times. When you have, for example, to make something new, you want to make, I don't know, thing that reads how the ambient light is, the level of ambient light, and then you have to make more or less the same decisions as you would make usually in software development. And I don't get tired of it. So I've heard that some people, for example, say that they don't like getting on a PC after work, but I think I don't have that problem. So I usually keep on doing things in my spare time, or also playing video games. So I'm a big fan of video games, creative video games, and I think I've learned things from video games that I use in my day to day in my software development job. So that's always a plus. I think it's difficult at the end of the day maybe to differentiate the skill sets that you use in your job and the skill sets that you use in your day-to-day life. For me, I use my experience that I get in software development in my day-to-day life and vice versa.
I agree, and I already had a couple of issues with that, because as you mentioned at the very beginning, you transition to software development because the feedback loop is shorter, right? One of the reasons you mentioned. And I really like that from our profession. You can do something and really quickly get feedback about the thing that you're working on. And in real life, it's not always like that. Some processes are very long, very, very long until you get any feedback. I'm not used to that. From time to time, I struggle to deal with like long processes in real life. It's like, where is my test that I can run and check how far am I from the solution?
Yeah, sometimes it's like that. But that's why I like some of my hobbies are a bit more so oriented as well. So yeah, for example, this electronics, it's right, like software development. At the end of the day, you are going to finish your project in 1-2 hours, and then you are going to see if it works or if it doesn't work.
Yeah,
yeah, but it is fun at the end of the day to have all the tools that we have right now in software development. So I didn't, at my first job, I didn't use tests that much because it was an absolutely big company, and we just dealt with legacy code. And since I've been in this new company, so my new company, I searched that they did work with tests and test-driven development and so on. Yeah, that has been a very big change for me. That has been a game changer. It's much more feasible dealing with code and not having to search for the failures in logs or having to use the debugger. Yeah, having all tested before you can throw that in your application server, that's great.
I think we talked about that the other day. It's like a natural evolution, right? You just start on software development at the very beginning, like working code is the code that just runs. And next step is like, okay, now it runs. Let's try to make it a bit more beautiful so next time I can understand it. And then it's like, okay, I really need to cover this thing with tests because it's breaking apart. So yeah, quite common evolution.
Yeah, at the very least, I've noticed that it's not so painful to see old code right now when I've done all with tests. Because before, usually after 6 months or so, you would see old code and you would think, what is this?
What is this? It happens to me all the time. Like I see, see code.
But with this trust-driven development, it's not so so hard to comparison.
It depends. It depends. Sometimes I look at my old code and I think, okay, that's nice. I did a good job here. And other times, like, okay, what a piece of crap. I can't believe I did this, but yeah.
I'm happy. I'm happy that it still happens to you both.
Well, I think it's going to happen for the rest of our life.
That only means we're getting better, I'd say.
You're learning on the time, or I'm learning on the time. So you get better, you learn new things, you apply new techniques. And then when you look back, it's like you realize that, okay, this is how I was back then. And now this is my new approach. And yeah, normal evolution, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes you even go back. So you know one technique, you apply it, then you learn something else. It's, oh, this is one better, right?
Yeah.
You start applying it and then realize, nah, it's not actually that better. And then you go back to the first one. Yeah, it's also fine.
Yeah.
We also talk about ideas. And I don't know how many ideas I've tried during my life. And I always go back to Vim.
I know you're a big fan of Vim.
Not a big fan. It's like it works for me, and every time I try a different thing, I don't know, I struggle to use it, and then I get tired. Okay, let's go fall back to the things I know how to use.
And do you try new plugins, or you stay with the same plugins time and time again?
I try new plugins from time to time, and I even try different versions of Vim. Recently, I've started to work with the new Vim. Alex recommended it to me. And it has different set of plugins, a bunch of improvements, and I'm happy with it. But the thing is, the base is the same. So most of the mappings has been there with me for ages and things like that. So I have a solid base, and then I can try things out here and there. But if everything goes wrong, I know where to go.
Yeah.
And this text editors and IDEs topic, it's a good example that software development never stops. It's always exciting. And you could imagine that this software development is a topic, is a subject, exists for decades already, right? People supposed to know which text editor is the best one, right? And just keep using it. But no, they keep creating new stuff. And this week, JetBrains released Fleet, I think it's called, right?
I think so.
Yeah. Yet another text editor with the twist. I think it could work as a distributed system. For example, you could parse your code for syntax highlighting and stuff on another machine. So you could have powerful machines to do this boring and computational heavy stuff, and your editor will be used on not that powerful machine, and everything still works. And so it's a new approach. I'm not sure if it's a new approach. It's yet another attempt on these kind of editors. But yeah, people keep creating these kind of things.
Same with languages. Yeah. And we start to talk about frameworks or JavaScript frameworks, then it's like you have a new one every single week.
Yeah, when you see the skill sets of people that have worked with JavaScript, and it's usually a big, big, big block of text with very different names. And yeah, I usually when I see this type of JavaScript frameworks, then I think, yeah, I don't know all of them. I only know the the typical ones, but yeah, there's so much of them. Yeah.
Too many of them, and the good thing is under the hood, they rely on the same. Well, not on the same, but they rely on patterns and frameworks that are well known. So once you learn one, it's easier to jump to the next one.
And also languages are always changing. Like I've seen a tendency in the last years that, for example, Java is converging with other languages with this use of async programming and lambdas and all of the new things that they started introducing in Java 8. They've only expanded on it on Java 11 and Java 17. So I don't know if we are going to have a universal language at the end.
Don't think so.
This is creative part of every software developer. Yeah. You have to keep creating.
Yeah. If we had a universal language, that would be a bit boring, yeah.
there could be just one, the best one.
Yeah, if you ask, each person would tell you what the best one is.
That's right, that's right.
This is the best one, and don't care what the others say.
Yeah, totally.
Same with languages, frameworks, even static typing versus dynamic typing, right?
Yeah.
It's popular now. I don't know which one is more popular, but it changes over the time. I saw a static type system being the way to go, and then changing to duck typing, things like that, the way to go, and then back to typing, back to... So it's a trend, and it's like a pendulum. It's changing. You have to, as a professional, you have to be ready to switch, and that's it.
Yeah, but that's always a bit of a surprise. Like, for example, in Java, they introduced this bar part, like a bit of static typing, and mm-hmm. I found that a bit interesting, because Java has always been one of the defenders of static typing. And now they're beginning to take things or take hints from Groovy and from other types of languages. But that's why I said this. We are converging on a bit of things. I think it's they only give new possibilities to programmers that come from other languages. And so I don't know if it's good or if it's bad, but...
Question is, do we really need it?
Yeah. Because at the end of the day, what is the good coding style right now in this type of languages where we have the possibilities to use both?
You can write crappy code in any language with any type system, with any framework.
That's so. Right.
That's the most important part. So yeah, Alex, you spoke a bit about coming back to this geology and informatics part. You spoke about that we have a lot to research still on our Earth, and we don't need to go beyond. Mm-hmm. But I also think that is one of the futures of programming and geology would be extra Earth resources,
mm-hmm.
extraplanetary resources, like, for example, getting comets to populate planets with water. For example, I know that people wanted right now to make a base in the moon,
mm-hmm.
so it wouldn't be so costly to get rockets to space. One of the things that we could make there is try to get a comet and redirect it to the moon so you have all the components you need to make fuel, for example. That's another place where I think geologists will have to... So geologists are the ones that are going to be assessing all the extraplanetary resources, like, for example, planets, meteorites, comets, what have you. Yeah, of course, that also means we will have to have a lot of software development in the background, because we cannot go there in person to look at it. So you have to have probes and automated things that are going to assess this type of things. I find that is exciting, but yeah, as you said, we also have to have in our minds that the Earth is the Earth, and we are going to be living here for a long time still.
Hopefully.
I hope so, yeah.
Let's stay optimistic.
There's an exciting movement right now in geology and development. There's a lot of new companies that are trying to get this new hot thing of the $1 billion asteroids. So yeah, I think that's a trend more than anything, but it's also good, I think, for this mixture between geology and informatics. It's another field that will only be expanded in the future.
It means you would have like superpowers in this case, right? You know both subjects.
That's a bit the profile I'm trying to give you with this. Nice. Geologist, software developer.
That's really nice. So the next job might not be that hard to get. They will chase you this time.
I don't know if I am going to be working on that in the future, but yeah, hopefully.
Yeah. Okay.
I still have a couple of questions that I have to ask you, because I know people are waiting for them. One of them is, what's your advice for people that are trying to transition? So the people mm-hmm. are coming from different backgrounds as you, and they want to become a software developer.
At the end of the day, I think programming, software developing is a bit building blocks that you lay down. And each and every person that I know that come from other fields. So I've in this company, when I started working in Spain, there was a lot of foreigners as well that weren't software developers or that hadn't done any formal software developing education. For example, physicists, mathematicists, also people that came from not university. I think the common denominator here is that software developing is very logic. So that's one of the greatest advantages. Everything in software development has a reason, more or less. So if something goes wrong in your code, there's a reason behind it. It's not like, I don't know, like medicine, when maybe there's a more complicated reason why you have a sickness. But in software development, if you're a logic person, you will get used to working in software developing. You can learn software development by yourself. Maybe you'll need some type of formal learning down the road. But to start with, I think, as you said, Pablo, like right now there's a lot of openings in software development, a lot of work. Any person could make the change, I think, with enough time. And the way on that, to reach that would be just start programming a bit by yourself, take a course. There's a lot of free courses in the internet right now. That's what I did for Java, for example. So I started working in my first job as a Java developer, but I had absolute zero experience or formal education as a Java developer. But it came natural to me. So I had experience in classic programming languages like C and C++, basic, and changing to object-oriented programming wasn't that hard. Just make a bit for yourself, try to search around in the internet, and then finding the first job can be a bit challenging. I think the best thing is trying to find a place where they would teach you a bit about the language. For example, consulting jobs. So a good thing about consulting companies is that they are always searching for new people. They usually give courses to people that are entering with entry-level programming. Mm-hmm. So maybe you can get a course in Java. It's going to be a very, 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 very surface-level course. Maybe you will not have a lot of idea of what you're doing when you get your first assignment, but everything is available in the internet. So every which problem you have, you can solve by learning to search for it in Google. So Google Foo, at the end of the day, is our best tool when you're starting.
You also mentioned that you started as a QA, right? So probably you don't have to go straight for a software developer position. You could go for something like QA or even support, right? Mm-hmm. Could be an entry point for newcomers.
Yeah, so our first assignment when I started doing my things was more maintenance of existing code. So I didn't have to start with design patterns and with all this theoretical part of the software development cycle. Testing, it's always easy for people because you have the finished product and you just have to think on ways to break that. That's also always a bit more easy than thinking on how to create something.
And how about moving to a different country? Because I saw that you're originally from Spain and you moved to Germany. Is that something that you also recommend to people that are starting or they want to improve on their careers?
I'd say yes. Many people I've known here in Germany come from countries around the Mediterranean and they've done their first job here in Germany. And I think they have a higher level of programming than what I saw when I was working in Spain. So in Spain, we have a bit more stillness in our jobs. We get a job and then we stay on this job for many, many years. And I think this flow of jobs, so changing careers or changing workplace is more common in Central Europe, Germany, France, England, what have you. There's always the problem of the language. For example, I work 8 hours per day in German.
Yeah.
Right now, I have a bit more confidence in my German, so I can directly speak with the clients and so. There's absolutely no problem. And you must also think that technical language is usually not so difficult as the language that you're going to use in your everyday. So I wasn't so confident in my German at the start, but I could defend myself very good when I was speaking about programming. In my case, it was a bit it was a bit strange because I came here in May of 2021. So that was in the middle of the pandemic. So yeah, I've only done working remote. It has been fun. I can only recommend going to another country, seeing what people are doing in other countries. More so if you think that you are getting stuck in your workplace. So that was a bit my feeling in Spain. I was happy with my position in Spain, but I thought that I had no more room to develop myself in a technical career. That's one of the problems we have in Spain, that when you want to go higher, you have to go into management positions. And I wanted to develop myself further in a technical point of view. I don't see myself like a manager. And that was very good. Like right now, I have a lot of possibilities. In other countries, there's always a technical career. Also, when you think there's not, yeah, there is.
And you made a very good point with language. Like when people ask me, what should I learn if I want to become a software developer? I always tell them, well, the first thing you need to learn is English. And then
of course.
Maybe programming language.
That's also a very good point for searching in internet.
Yeah.
So most of the programming problems you're going to face in your day-to-day work, if you search for them, for example, in Spanish, you're not going to find an answer. And if you learn to search for them in English, you're going to find everything.
Yeah, for me, it was a game changer in my career. Yeah, as I mentioned, I started long ago. And when I started to be a software developer in Spain, it wasn't so important to speak English. When I learned English, there was a massive booster of my career. A whole new world of possibilities was open to me, like new countries and new positions everywhere and things like that. So, yeah.
I have something to say. Just by listening for all these tips from Pablo, I've noticed one thing which wasn't mentioned. I think this the soft skill, the problem-solving part is super key. Important. Yeah. It's crucial here. I see that you are problem solver. You change country, and as the one who also changed country, I know that you not just switch the country, right? You basically get a package of problems to solve, and it's it depends how you look at this package, right? It could be a package of problems, or it could be a package of challenges, right? The things that you could solve and then feel good about this.
Right on. Yeah.
The same with the career change, right? Sometimes people say, oh, I have to change my path, but they've look at it as a problem. It's not as an opportunity. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like for you it was it was yet another challenge. At least it feels this way.
Yeah, absolutely.
For all people who would like to make this change, I would highly recommend not to treat it as a problem, but as an opportunity, as a challenge, as the thing that interesting to solve.
Mm-hmm.
And then anything you touch could be interesting challenge. And then it's never boring.
Yeah, at the end, all of the things that you use in your work or looking for a job or so, they end up seeping in your personal life as well. So you'll be able to tackle more problems easily when you are a problem solver. Yeah. And working at the end of the day, I've always thought that working is 8 hours per day of your day. So you cannot be so complacent that you are unhappy with your job. I've known people that say that they can keep their job and personal lives apart, but at the end of the day, I think it will end up seeping as well. So you have to be content enough with what you're doing in your job. It's a third of your life.
Definitely.
If you're having doubts about changing careers or taking on software development or going to another country, do it. Make the change.
I think it's awesome summary, right?
Yeah, it's a good summary. I was about to say, like, the most important skill is to be comfortable out of your comfort zone, which is exactly what you said.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it for today. Thank you for listening. In case of any questions, simply send us an email at codeandbeyond@protonmail.com. You will also find the address in the show notes. Keep being amazing. Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.